Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks that are really on the move. I'm Corey Johnson. This is episode number 197. And it's a special episode at that. We're going to dig deep into the fears of a bank collapse with some fresh comments from some surprising companies far from Silicon Valley, Silicon Valley's bank. We have comments from Caterpillar. And yeah, we'll talk to a national airline with a secret venture capital portfolio. And we have an in-depth interview just in time for this time, a devoted junk bond investor, Eagle Point Capital CEO Thomas Majewski, who's focused on what he thinks is a profitable tranche of debt even now. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to the Drill Down on any of your favorite podcast platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, you name it. But hit the subscribe button. Make sure you catch every show.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com. That's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more.
I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to the Drill Down. We explain the business stories behind stocks and a move. And boy, they have been moving this week. Isaac Webster joining me, our executive producer. Isaac, the fallout from the collapse of Signature Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, Silvergate Capital continues both on a sort of a daily basis, but I think in a big macro way, a lot of companies are getting a lot of questions that you wouldn't expect. That's what we're going to dig today.
So Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on then?
Well, let's start with that great Silicon Valley company, Caterpillar.
Caterpillar is not one I think of a Valley company, but Caterpillar trades under CAT, of course, C-A-T. Shares have dropped 13% over the past month and are flat for the past over the past 12 months. What's going on with CAT?
I have not been to Caterpillar headquarters in Peoria, Illinois, but no, it is far from Silicon Valley in every way, mm-hmm. although they'd like to argue that their technologies are very exciting. But Caterpillar is not exactly a company I would have expected it to be fielding questions about the fallout from Silicon Valley Bank's collapse and Signature Bank and Silvergate Capital. And I think when we look back on this episode, this will be blamed on Silicon Valley Bank. But in fact, I think we're going to see some other companies with some lending problems, other banks. Yes, but what about companies like Caterpillar that also lend a lot of money and have to manage their business, not least of which is Caterpillar's CAT Financial, will add at speaking Tuesday at a Goldman Sachs conference called Con Expo. Caterpillar's CEO took some questions about Silicon Valley Bank, some concerns. CEO Jim Umpleby had to answer.
Let me mention CAT Financial first. CAT Financial is very conservatively managed. We only loan money to customers that are buying Caterpillar equipment. And of course, we have that equipment that's collateral for that loan. We match assets and liability and duration. That's very important. And again, it's a very conservatively managed operation. In terms of looking for signposts, one more comment about CAT Finance. One of the things we do monitor as a signpost is past dues, and those are near record lows. So looking at that, what that tells us our customers financially are quite healthy. Now, other signposts we look at in the business, obviously lots of conversations with our dealers. We look at order rates. We look at sales to users. We look at quotation activity that's occurring. And again, everything that we see is very consistent with that that landscape that I described for you earlier in terms of what we see in the marketplace. So again, we watch a lot of things very closely, but again, past dues near record lows for cat finance, you know, healthy stews, healthy order rates. We feel good about the business.
So they say they feel good. They say their customers are quite healthy. Caterpillar's often said that they have had problems in the past with their financing unit, but a lot of eyes on them, more eyes on them than you would expect this week because of other problems coming out of Silicon Valley and elsewhere.
I mean, there's a lot more eyes on all lenders at this point, especially with the Credit Suisse news today. Corey, what is your next drill down?
Let's look at Alaska Airlines.
Alaska Airlines trades under ALK and shares have dropped 4% in a week and 21% over the past year. What's going on with Alaska Air?
Well, Alaska, well, first of all, I should say that I work hard to try to take my biases out of the way that I cover the news, but I have biases, everyone does, and I'm still mad at these guys for taking away my beloved Virgin America when they bought that company low 10 years ago or so. But surprisingly to me, I guess I knew this, but maybe to you, listener, maybe to you, Isaac Webster, Alaska Air Group has a venture capital arm. They have a little bit of venture exposure. And one wonders what's going to happen in the world of venture. And venture capitalists are pining on this in some ways in the national media, but so is the chief financial officer from Alaska Air Group. Shane Tackett was asked about this on Tuesday at a J.P. Morgan Industrials conference about how Silicon Valley Bank's collapse might affect them. And his answer, I think, was a little bit of a surprise.
We don't bank with them. I don't think, honestly, we're limited partners in a couple venture sort of, you know, we have a venture capital arm, very small. We're LPs with a couple of folks that were impacted on a very small degree. You're talking like sub $5 million, but they've gotten all of their money. So it hasn't really had an issue. There hasn't been a ripple through that we're feeling or seeing or worried about right now. In terms of, you know, the immediate impact on the West Coast or investment, certainly a scary time for those startups and the firms that were, you know, banking with them and had, you know, 25 or more percent of their cash, you know, with them. So I don't know that much about it. That's your guys' industry, the banking industry, more than mine. I hope that this stops and there's not, you know, sort of a spread of contagion here, but it seems like it's pretty isolated right now.
So contagion is the question, and yeah, it's affecting an airline, particularly one with a venture capital book.
Yeah, he kind of reminded me of Mariah Carey right there. I don't know her. I don't know her.
Really?
That's a famous Mariah Carey meme. I think you guys can look it up at home. It's very funny.
I think we're going to be hearing a lot about that.
I don't know her. I don't know her. Corey, what is your next drill down?
Well, we should at least look at one bank and a big bank far, far, far Silicon Valley, NatWest Group, big British bank. Had some SVB comments this week too.
NatWest Group trades under NWG and shares have dropped 13% over the past month, but they've gained NWG shares have gained almost 5% in a year. So what are they saying?
Yeah, another bank, NatWest. Talking about these issues at a Morgan Stanley European Financials Conference on Tuesday, CEO Allison Rose talking about, I think, some of the biggest questions that this raises. Not just, should everyone manage risk better? Yeah. Is everyone thinking about risk more? Yeah, obviously. But maybe more interesting, how are depositors going to behave differently? Because we have had the federal government in the U.S. come out and say, we're going to back depositors above the amounts of the FDIC insurance. They have not reissued those statements. They haven't reiterated that support in legislation or policy or even policy suggestions. And maybe that's wise because maybe you want a specter of moral hazard without having to say it. Maybe you want to take time to get the legislation right. But between now and then, what happens at banks? What happens with depositors? And what's it like to be at a bank right now? Well, CEO of NatWest Group, Allison Rose, again speaking at a Morgan Stanley European Financials Conference on Tuesday. Here's what she had to say.
It's been an interesting sort of weekend, and I'm sure a busy weekend for everyone. I think, first of all, we don't see any read across of SVB to us. One of the things that we've been very focused on at NatWest is building a very, you know, resilient, all-weatherproof balance sheet, and that's both on the credit side, but also the liquidity and capital funding side. If you look at our position, our strong capital and liquidity position, it's very robust. Our business is across retail and commercial, very well diversified, so it's not concentrated in any areas. And that very disciplined risk management is a core part of our strategy. So I think on our deposits, and I think one of the big unknowns is how customer behavior is evolving around deposits. I think from a strategic perspective, you know, we obviously have, you know, high levels of deposits and excess liquidity. And so our strategy is very much around balancing our position appropriately between the value of those deposits, whether for liquidity or income, making sure we balance the overall all returns that we make and the decisions we make around that. I'm very comfortable we have the right product. We will be competitive, we will be dynamic, and we'll continue to manage that as we go forward. And obviously the things we're looking and watching closely are how customers are behaving around their deposits and how the competitive market is evolving. And we're very comfortable we're managing both.
So, yeah, managing risk is what banks are supposed to do. When the banks screw up doing that, it's what oversight is supposed to do in the U.S., from the federal government, from the FDIC, from the Office of the Controller of the Comptroller of the Currency, which famously does much tougher audits than the FDIC. But, you know, I think banks, even banks that are managing things a little bit better, are obviously kicking the tires on their own systems this week. All right, well, what does this mean for other types of debt? We have just the guest for that. Eagle Point Capital is a publicly traded investment fund that focuses on a special tranche of corporate debt, collateralized loan obligations, CLOs. Yeah, it's a piece of junk. Literally a piece of junk bonds. This company is paying a huge dividend right now, but its stock is getting beat up. So how is the business of lending junk right now? We're going to talk to Eagle Point Capital CEO Tom Majewski right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com. That's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more.
Hi, welcome back to the Drill Down podcast. We are joined right now by Tom Majewski, the CEO of Eagle Point. One of our rare repeat interviews, Tom. It seemed like a good idea at the time because when we booked you, because your stock has gone, you know, has performed quite well since we last had you on the show. But because you are involved in the world of high yield credit, oh my goodness, what a great time to have you on the show. What the world looks really different to me than it did a week ago with the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank. Less so Silvergate. I was predicting that one. But how does the world look different to you?
Well, thanks very much for having me on again. I like the repeat status here. So appreciate your having me.
It's a rare one.
Indeed. No one last Monday was talking about regional bank crisis. So we're certainly looking at an entire new world in the market. Against that, I think the phrase regional bank crisis is significantly overblown. What the unfortunate events at Silicon Valley Bank in particular, Signature Bank much smaller in the overall scheme of things. Silicon Valley Bank is the second largest bank failure in the history of the United States.
Yeah, you're taking Lehman out of that list, and I think that's appropriate. Lehman was not a depositor insured bank.
Correct. Taking out basically of any FDIC insured institution. where people put their money in at 100 cents on the dollar and expect to get their money out at 100 cents on the dollar, maybe even with a little bit of interest. And therein lies the problem. This was not a credit risk problem. This was an asset liability mismatch problem. Banks do what banks have done for a long time. They borrow at a low rate and they lend out at a higher rate. Typically, they borrow short, however, and lend long. You're in my checking account or savings account, whatever it may be. Hopefully not at Silicon Valley Bank, but even if it was, it all worked out. That mismatch is a classic bank failure, a classic formula for bank failure. And what we saw play out was not any particular credit problems in their portfolio, but simply in the case of SVB and a number of other financial institutions having long-dated, even five-year or even longer fixed interest instruments in a rising interest rate world. And the way banks are able to report their finances, and there's some merit to this, but there's also a cost. If a bank buys something similar of a good quality and they plan to just hold it to maturity, rather than have the mark to market of that investment, which might even be AAA or AA rated, not a credit risk investment, but rather than having the marks move around through their earnings per share and their capital base, the accountants let banks use something called hold to maturity accounting.
Right.
1% treasury bonds at par 5 years ago, and sure, they're going to get their 1% and their money back.
Well, yeah.
Sadly, and the depositors wanted the money back sooner.
And for most investors in the world, they have never, in the 1980s, 10% was seen as an improvement in the rate environment, right? But ever since we have lived through a generally systemically lowered and lowering rate environment, right? That where everyone on some level, their entire experience as an investor, as a business manager, was to watch rates go down. And your business, which I want to get to here, is all about rates, and rates on the high yield end has existed almost for its entirety, right? Since the 80s, since junk bonds, high yield credit, whatever, has been a big business, has been in an environment where rates are generally coming down over the long term. That might not be the case anymore. And I wonder if a lot of the knee-jerk instincts and a lot of the business models, and indeed the Eagle Point business model, is on some level based on a long-term lowering of credit rates and a near-term easing of credit rates. And so I wonder, let's step back. 30,000 feet, elevator pitch, what's your business model?
So Eagle Point Credit Management is a specialist investment manager focused on delivering high current income strategies in niche off-the-run investment markets. Among those things that we manage include CLO equity, and something that we run through a number of portfolios, including one publicly traded portfolio called Eagle Point Credit Company, which trades on the New York Stock Exchange under ECC. This owns substantially all of its assets are pieces of CLO equity, where typically Eagle Point as a firm is the majority owner of the CLO equity tranche. Now, CLOs, we think of, frankly, as a better bank in that what they do is lend money to big American companies. These are typically senior secured loans to big American companies, American Airlines, Cablevision, large companies below investment grade, but companies you do business with every day, and smaller companies as well. But importantly, they're senior and secured, and they're typically floating rate. A CLO finances itself with 12-year financing that's prepayable after 2 years. And these loans that we make are typically about 7 or 8 years. So we do what every bank does. A CLO does what every bank does. We borrow at a low rate and we lend at a high rate and we keep the spread for ourselves. But CLOs have done what no bank has ever figured out. We borrow long and lend short, but we can also prepay our financing if we decide it's advantageous to just unwind any given CLO. We're fortunate, our assets and liabilities are all floating rate. So it's all typically off of 3-month LIBOR or 3-month SOFR. So as rates move up on the loans or rates move up on our financing costs, it's pretty much in lockstep. It's never perfect, but it's the opposite of what happened at Silicon Valley Bank or many other banks that have had proverbial runs on the bank.
So Jeff Gundlach had this fantastic interview on CNBC this week, and he said, does high yield credit ever really mature? Hasn't it always just refinanced or gone bust? But maybe we're in a rate now where there isn't refinancing of high yield. And I wonder how that might change your business if you've thought about that.
Sure. So there's two different things when people use the phrase high yield. There's fixed rate high yield bonds, which are typically unsecured. And then there's something called senior secured loans, which are also below investment grade, but they're floating rate. Now, if you issued a high yield bond 2 years ago, you probably issued at 4%. That might not meet the actual technical definition, in my opinion, of a high yield, but that's the rate where many companies were able to borrow at. In the loan, and if you borrowed 2 years ago as a bond borrower, you're still paying 4%, and you're quite pleased because you're getting very, very attractive financing. If you're in the loan market, you were paying a floating rate of interest. So you were borrowing at, say, LIBOR plus 350 a few years ago. Well, you're still paying LIBOR plus 350 or maybe SOFR plus 350 now, but all of a sudden your base rate is close to 5%. And your rate that would have been under 4 is now over 8% on an all-in basis. So for companies, in many cases, they're facing higher debt costs today if they were a loan borrower than they would have faced 2 years ago. And that may cause some credit problems unto itself, but it's why do companies refinance their debt in general, certainly in the loan market, is principally due to mergers and acquisitions. And we invest in CLOs, collateralized loan obligations. That L is actually the same L in LBO, leverage buyouts. In most cases, the companies that our CLOs lend money to are companies that are owned by private equity sponsors like Blackstone or Carlyle or KKR, many of the best in breed companies. But what these folks are interested in doing is buying a company, cutting costs, growing EBITDA, optimizing operations, and then selling it 3 to 5 years from now at a handsome profit. And when they go to sell that company, they have to pay off the debt. Now, probably some other company is going to buy it and issue new debt as well. So Jeff's statement is correct. It's refinanced. But as part of the sale from one private equity sponsor to maybe another company or another private equity sponsor, they actually have to come back to the table and repay their debt. Over the long term, loans
and at that
prepay,
moment, you get made whole as well and get
we get paid at par. Yeah,
right.
And so here's some interesting stats. In April of 2020, clearly a very difficult time in the world, 2% of the loan market paid off at par that month. So just by opening the mail when loans were trading at 80 cents on the dollar, CLOs were getting 2% of their portfolio back on average at par. You could take those par dollars and go be on the offense when there were a few other buyers. Like in that case, everyone made COVID mistakes. No one called COVID perfectly. However, the ability to take par dollars and reinvest them in a discounted market more than made up for any mistakes you might have made in many cases for CLOs. So even though rates are moving up or down, there's always a reason to repay.
Do you anticipate more or less, I won't let you push, more or less activity in private equity exits in the next year, given the current environment of rising rates, of new difficulty for venture financing, which I think might be a fair expectation after the Silicon Valley Bank exit? What do you guess, more or less?
Less, that's an easy one. If anything, and I have data to back it up, that we're seeing it already in that the prepayment rate on loans, while on average it's in the low 30s, last year was about 15%, give or take. And so by hard math, you can see the amount of realizations and sales of companies has slowed for a period of time. Now, private equity, and it's very different than venture capital funds, and the private equity investors are usually investing in companies that have earnings and profits and revenue. Venture capital is typically someone, hey, I've got an app, I've got a great idea, let's scale it to 1 billion users, but we don't have any revenue yet. So we're dealing at a more advanced stage company in general. Private equity funds are typically 12 or 15 years in life. And while sponsors typically look to turn something over every 3 or 4 years, a great example would be Hilton Hotels. this is from ages ago. Blackstone bought it in 2007 on the eve of the financial crisis. They doubled their money, which is great, but it took them over 10 years to do it. But they had the steady hand to be able to, the funds that they owned it in were long-term funds without the risk of redemption, without the risk of a run on the bank, frankly. They probably got lower than their targeted IRR, if I had to guess, but there's never a scenario where doubling your money is bad either. In that case, the creditors all got paid in full, and the private equity investors probably got a lower IRR, but a good outcome. But they had the steady hand, and they sold when it made sense to sell. So we're seeing a slowdown today, but we'll pick it up in the future.
So maybe fewer opportunities for you going forward. I wonder what that means, you know, to put a point on it. What does that mean for your dividend? And you've had a great history of special dividends as well.
Sure. So the what we were just talking about there were principal repayments. And typically within a CLO, the principal is reinvested within the CLO. And just the net interest income is distributed to the CLO equity. And that net interest income, which we report on a quarterly basis, is typically what we use to fund the distributions to common shareholders. So even if loans aren't prepaying, as long as they're not defaulting, we keep getting that interest. And again, we're borrowing at a low rate, lending at a high rate, so that NIM or net interest margin keeps coming out to our CLOs, which allows us to have typically plenty of cash in the coffers every single quarter at ECC.
So again, to the safety of the dividend, how do you put it?
It's hard to give formal dividend guidance or distribution guidance. We have declared distributions for the first half of the year. And you can see our cash flows are typically comfortably in excess of our distributions. That's the number one thing. As long as we have more cash, that's usually a good sign.
So then how does it start to look for you in this? How does the changing rate environment change your business?
Not a heck of a lot on CLO equity, to be completely candid. If anything, and this probably takes place a little bit over time, not yet. Everyone loves that these loans are floating rate. They're paying higher interest. If Silicon Valley Bank owned all floating rate loans, they probably would still be Silicon Valley Bank today. So we love getting floating rate investments. That's great. As rates go up, we win. Flip side is there's a company CFO or treasurer who has to pay basically double the interest that he or she was paying 18 months ago. And you hear headlines of the world loans or companies are over-levered. There's excess leverage in the system. Much of that is hyperbole, not backed by data, in my opinion. But the data represents averages, and there's always a distribution. If anything, I do think that leads to a slight pickup in corporate defaults over the next 6 to 18 months, as companies can probably get by with one or two payments. Like if you have a floating rate mortgage, you were paying low interest, now you're paying a higher rate of interest. You could probably get by for a little bit, but at some point, the higher interest costs may come and hurt you. And that, in our world, would cause higher defaults in the underlying loans. On the surface, that's bad news. However, typically, CLO equity outperforms in the medium term when defaults are higher. And why is that? That's very odd. And I saw your look there.
Yes.
It's because
for our dear listeners, their eyebrows were raised.
He had a one eye eyebrow raise, very, very pronounced. We have a general view, and this is my personal belief, that price volatility in loans will always be worse than the actual default experience. The rumor is worse than the news.
Sure.
It's hard to see a scenario where 10% of corporate America is defaulting and loans trade down 5 points.
How many banks look like they're going to go out of business on Friday and Monday that are fine by midweek?
Well, one, I guess, or two. But in general, the new rumor, there's thousands of these leveraged loan borrowers. If 5% of loans are going to default in the next year, and that's not my prediction, but if that were to happen, nearly certainly loans are trading at 90 cents on the dollar or lower. And that in my experience in the credit markets, the rumor, because credit people by definition were pessimists, the rumor is worse than the news. And as long as the price of loans stays low when defaults are high, which kind of makes sense, you're not going to have 10% of loans defaulting and every other loan trading at par. There's going to be distress in the credit markets. Every loan that doesn't default pays off at par. It's a binary outcome. It might be refinanced, as Jeff pointed out, but it's definitely you get the money back at par and you can keep reinvesting on those dark days.
So maybe put it a different way, fewer deals, but better deals for you.
Very well, good way to put it. Yes. So we might have some mark to market drawdown along the way. And an perfect example is 2020 and 2021 for us. We had if you invested with ECC on January 1 of 2020, your NAV and distribution increase between beginning of 2020 and the end of 2021 was great. That wasn't a straight line, unfortunately. You know, we haven't figured out how to make it a straight line yet, but the math worked over time. Very few investments are immune from short-term mark-to-market volatility, but the ability to keep reinvesting with cheap money locked in yesterday when the world is proverbially on fire or uncertain, frankly, is a great opportunity. Sadly, our screens are bright green today. I'm looking up and down my Bloomberg monitor. I kind of wish they were lower for a little longer. That wouldn't have been the end of the world. I think the market's quickly figuring out this was much more the FDIC did what it's supposed to do. It came in, it made the right decision for the depositors. Yeah. And by and large, it was
I'd say the Fed and the Treasury did what it was supposed to do. The FDIC started by doing what it was supposed to do. And then the Fed and the Treasury got them to do even more, which, you know,
maybe gave them a little nudge to say, let's cover all the deposits. We got to the right result by Monday morning. How about that? That's the relevant time frame. So
I couldn't agree more. Well, Tom Majewski, really appreciate your time. Oh, what a great time, like I said, to talk to Eagle Point Credit, to look at CLOs and to look at what's happening out on the edge of the higher yield world. Such a fascinating company, and we're grateful for your time. Great. Coming up next on the Drill Down, the Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot about Eagle Point.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage, connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And if you like the show, or I don't know, if you don't like the show, go on Apple Podcasts and tell us what you like, what you don't like. You can do the same at Spotify now, where other people will know what to think of the Drill Down. So many thoughts to be had, Isaac.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod, and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, we're back with the Drill Down Bite, the one number that tells us a whole lot about Eagle. Fine folks at Eagle Point Credit. Isaac, I mentioned the dividend so often, and I don't like to have really stock-related bites, but I think it's interesting the way this business is built, and it's built to basically give all the profits, or most of the profits, back to the investors in the company. And so as a result, this sell-off in this stock that has come with this, I don't know if you can call it a financial crisis, but the financial concerns of recent days and the failures of Silvergate Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, Signature, well, it has this company paying a much higher dividend, because if the dividend stays the same, I think what we heard there is the dividend is going to stay the same, maybe. It sounded like kind of that was the hinting and the guidance. If the dividend stays the same and the stock price goes up, the dividend yield goes up, and that is your bite. The dividend yield at this moment for Eagle Point Credit, with the stock trading at about $10.50 a share, is 22.8%. So wow. If the stock were to stay flat and you're to hold the stock for a year, you get a 22.8% return on your money with a dividend payment. So
it seems like a win.
Well, yeah, 22.8% would be a great win on almost any year in the markets. but of course, the key is, can they keep paying that dividend? And can the stock price stay where it is right now? That dividend sort of helps keep a bottom on this stock, and an interesting company because of where we are in the credit and debt cycle. You've been listening to Drill Down Podcast. We're grateful for your time in these exciting times. We're going to continue to keep an eye on things. Keep an eye on this podcast feed for special episodes. Had one last week that I think really hit the story on the head. Who knows what's next? We'll be ready. Isaac Webster will, of course. He's our executive producer. Ben Wilson's our editor extraordinaire. I'm Corey Johnson. The Drill Down's a production of the Business Podcast Network.